It is day 31 of the longest government shutdown in American history, and there are no signs of it coming to an end. Over the weekend, President Trump offered to temporarily extend protections for young immigrants who are brought to the country illegally as children. In exchange, he wants the $5 billion for his border wall. Democrats rejected the three-year proposal protecting DACA immigrants. They say it doesn't go far enough. They want the president to reopen the government first, then negotiate border security or barrier funding. Here to make sense of where we stand and look at where we're headed is Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Welcome back, Julian.
Thanks for having me.
I know it's a lot to ask of you to tell us where we stand and make sense of it right now, but we're going to do it anyway. The president made an offer. Democrats said no thanks. What's your take on his offer and the Democrats' rejection of it?
Yeah, the two are really negotiating different things. President Trump is obviously insisting on the wall and the money that would come from it. He's now thrown onto the table a temporary extension of a program that he himself dismantled. Democrats are really arguing before any of that, the process itself is not legitimate. You can't shut down the government and then make requests for things. That's not how the process works, and it's not legitimate. So the question is, do Democrats now take this opportunity and try to put together a package that they accept and the president will convince Republicans to move with, or do they hold firm? Because this is not working for the president. Public opinion so far has turned against him and the Republicans, not the Democrats.
Well, it's working for Mark Meadows. Republicans like him. He praised the plan. Meadows is the head of the conservative House Freedom Caucus. He says the ball is now in Democrats' court. On the other hand, as you said, there are some dissenters. Conservative commentator Ann Coulter calls the proposal on DACA amnesty for millions of illegals. The president responded with a tweet yesterday saying, no, amnesty is not part of my offer. To what extent do you think the president is being boxed in by different sides of his own party?
Well, he's clearly being boxed in by the House Republican caucus, which is, even with Meadows making these concessions, very firm against any serious immigration liberalization program. And I think the president understands if he sends anything beyond this, it's going to take a lot of work to get House Republicans to go along. That said, he does have the bully pulpit. He has leaned in on Republicans on other issues. So this could be a place he can actually move them. But he's in a difficult spot for sure. That said, he's not operating according to rational principle. This is very ideological and symbolic for him. And I think he wants to win, quote unquote, the fight.
Do you think that's why Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has, at least until this point, pretty much been absent?
So far, but there could be a point where he sees, in terms of partisanship, the calculation turns, and it's no longer in their interest to serve the president and to work with the president. We haven't hit that point at this moment, but so far the Republicans in the Senate are sitting tight and supporting the president.
Yeah, why haven't we hit this point so far? I mean, day 31 in, it's hurting a lot of people, and it's hurting a lot of politicians.
Well, Republican senators are still not seeing in their states that the polling is bad enough to suggest that they should turn against the president. I think it's very simple in that way. There's still support for the president fighting for the wall. There's still tolerance for the government being shut down. But every day, we literally will now feel more of an impact, not only government workers, but citizens who don't have government services. And so when an airport in a red state starts to really close down, that's when you have to look and see, is there movement in the electorate?
Is that what has made the difference in the past, in past government shutdowns? What have been the factors?
It did. In 1995-96, Republicans controlled Congress. Clinton was in the White House. You have a long shutdown, longest until now. And what really turned it was more and more news stories about what it meant not to have government, whether you were a tourist and couldn't get into a national park, or it was basic services that people depend on not being there. And Republicans under Gingrich felt the pressure and caved.
But we're hearing those stories all the time, individual stories.
Well, that's true. And that's where, at least certainly from the White House, he's not responding to those pressures. That said, it's been a partial government shutdown. The first real bite came with the paychecks not being delivered. It might take more time. And so we have to wait to see. But many people suffer in the meantime.
Julian, let's talk a little bit more about that. We've heard many stories of people who are suffering, families who are suffering. We're talking about 800,000 federal workers here, either furloughed or made to work without pay. They can be dire, these stories, but the larger picture, how much of a toll is this in aggregate taking on the federal workforce?
It's huge because it's not simply one paycheck missed. It's the uncertainty and instability of not knowing when the next one is coming. And so people make calculations about their finances, about their family. And so in addition to what happens today, you're wondering what happens 2 weeks out. And again, let's remember, this has a real world impact on people who are not government workers, from food being inspected to airplanes being inspected to training the workforce for future crises. All of this is stalled right now. So the larger macro impact is enormous. This is not normal. And this is a national crisis to have the government shut down this long.
Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton. He's co-author with Kevin Cruz of the new book, Fault Lines, A History of the United States Since 1974. Thank you, Julian.
Thanks for having me.